KLAV, 1230 AM.
You're listening to KLAV, Las Vegas.
Views and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the staff or management of KLAV.
This is Gambling with an Edge with Bob Dancer and Frank Nealon. Frank is the author of The Secret World of Video Poker Progressives, available at his website, ProgressiveVP.com, and is a former manager of the largest Las Vegas progressive slot team and has over 20 years of gambling experience. Bob Dancer is the best-known video poker player and writer in the country today, with more books than we can mention. Bob's won more than $1 million during a six-month period and has taught video poker at several casinos. To check out Bob's products, visit BobDancer.com. So if you're a Vegas local or are planning a trip here, this is one show you don't want to miss, because we'll be teaching you how to gamble with an edge. Now, here's Bob and Frank.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with Bob Dancer and Frank Nealon.
I have kind of a little funny story to tell.
Why not?
My roommate, Alan Eister, graduated this week, and he was at this huge thing at the Thomas and Mack, this graduation.
This is high school, this is college.
He got his associate's degree in chemistry and biology.
Okay. AA is two-year degree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, the dean of the school came up. This is the funniest thing I've ever seen happen at one of these events. And made a huge deal about the fact that they had more graduates than they've ever had before, and the spread between their oldest and the youngest was incredibly large. They had a 17-year-old graduating, and they had a 79-year-old graduating. Now, are you familiar with the concept of what's called neuro-linguistic programming?
No, but I would actually think they would have had older than 79 in the past.
Well, no, that was their oldest. But when you've heard a number or something recently, if you try to think of a random number or a random thing,
you get real close to 17 or 79.
The thing will pop into your head that you've just heard recently.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a technique actually used by confidence people.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Anyway, the valedictorian came on, who was also graduating with his doctorate in communications.
A doctorate and an AA degrees at the same graduation? That seems strange.
Yeah. Might have been a master's. But okay. Anyway, graduating in degree in communications, and he gave his beautiful speech, and about 5 minutes into it, he said, "But I want you to know, this hasn't been an easy road for me. 2 years in, I was beginning to feel like I would never get out of school. I was going to be here till I was 79 years old."
Very good.
And then he paused, realized maybe that wasn't the best thing to have said, and he went, but congratulations to the guy that did that, and he spoke for 5 more minutes. Nobody had any idea what he said, because the whole audience was either groaning, feeling bad for the 79-year-old, or laughing their butts off. So it was, anyway, that was the graduation I went to on Monday. I have a surprise for you.
A surprise? It's not my birthday.
Different kind of surprise. You're not going to believe who I am. I'm going to be doing it. You remember that special interview I did with Dr. McCowan? I put it on my site for download only.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to be doing another one of those. You want to take a wild guess at who I'm going to be interviewing?
I think you mentioned this to me.
Did I?
Well, you did mention...
Oh, that's right, at the party.
Somebody's name who took his name as a play on my name.
Oh, I didn't know that. Anyway, for the listeners out there, I will be interviewing in approximately a month's time Rob Singer, Bob Dancer's favorite guy.
Oh, yeah. There's just like zero chance it's going to be on the air in the show. But if you want to post it on the website, you knock yourself out.
Well, I have some very specific goals for this interview.
Okay.
And I'd like to tell you why I want to do this and see what you think about it.
Okay.
He has some techniques and systems, whatever you want to call them, which obviously diverge significantly from how you and I do things. Now,
yes.
I've been brought up, you know, since I was...
You've been brought up that 2 plus 2 equals
4.
Now, he denies that.
Well, I wasn't going to put it in exactly those words, but I was brought up that gambling is pure math. Mm. And obviously, I'm not talking about things like live poker here, where there is a human element involved. Those things, as we well know at this point, I completely don't understand and just go, people. Okay. But anything to do with games in a casino, you know, roulette, crab, these are pure math. And I don't really understand how people can disagree on anything to do with math. You know, 2 + 2 = 4, as you said. And if someone else comes up with an answer of 3, you would think that would simply imply that they were, you know, wrong or right. Your choices are not between different answers. It's just being right or wrong. Is that how you see it?
Sort of. This is not a chocolate vanilla kind of choice. This is you're right or you're wrong.
Yeah, you're right or you're wrong. So I don't understand how it is possible that he has a different opinion. And I'm less concerned with what he thinks and more concerned with why he thinks it. I really want to know and understand for myself what road led him to these beliefs that he has. I'm going to make a really concerted effort in my interview not to discuss who's right or wrong. I think that's irrelevant to the discussion. If he offers an opinion on something, I might offer the opposing opinion, but I'm not going to get into an argument with him about who's right and who's wrong. I just don't see a point to that. And I really am fascinated in hearing what he has to say and the road that led him to where he is.
I mean, you do what you want, but I think we're giving credibility to someone whose writing does not deserve that. So I don't think there's any chance he's going to be on the air.
I'm interviewing him. Everyone thinks I'm crazy. Me interviewing him might hurt his credibility, but...
is he aware of this potential drawback? Tonight's guest is going to be Stanford Wong, and this is casino tournament strategy. This would be an area that you don't know anything about, Frank.
Indeed. Well, I wouldn't say I know nothing about it.
You've played video poker tournaments?
I have done video poker tournaments, and I did one at the old Ramada Express. Do you remember down in Laughlin?
Tropicana Express now.
Tropicana Express now. And they had so many entrants. They had 10,000 entrants or something like that. It was a 3 or 4 day tournament.
Yeah, but they were giving away a prize pool of $350, so it was all worth it.
No, it was a prize pool of $500,000.
Huh.
Yeah, first place was like $50,000 or something. But anyway, this was many years ago, and my partner and I, who was Steve at the time, thought to ourselves, you know, with this many entrants, the only thing it's going to take first place or even first, the only serious money was first through fifth.
Okay.
And to get in first through fifth, you're going to need a royal.
At least one.
So we played, for this one tournament only, we played a strategy where basically we were going for the royal and nothing else.
So if you were dealt 4 kings and an ace, you held the suited ace king.
Well, I was just about to tell you the story. Steve got dealt 4 tens, held 1 ten only, and drew the royal.
He's a good player.
And we took third for, I think, 15,000 or something, 25,000.
That's a nice little hit.
So I wouldn't say I've never contemplated the concept before, but it is a bit alien to me.
Well, good. Let's do some commercials before we get to Stanford. The South Point. It has more than 10,000 video poker games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else anywhere in the world. South Point is giving a car away every day in May. You can earn drawing tickets up to a maximum of $250 by playing up to $1,250 coin in. Turns out that I had lunch with Michael Gaughan today, and he said more people are taking the cash than the car. The car, including the stuff he's paying on, is worth like $10,000 more because he's paying taxes and license and registration and stuff. But more people are taking the cash. Monday there is double point days. It's Memorial Day. And midnight to midnight, slot players get 5 times points. In June, they're going to have a swipe and win promotion there. What this means is you play 200 points and spin go to the kiosk and spin, and you get some prize. The top prizes are $50 in free play or $50 in gas card. The booby prize is 2,500 points on your card, which is worth $7.50. In past times they did this, the prizes you got were highly correlated to your mailer. So if you were getting the top mailer, you could count on getting $50 every day on the this swipe contest. If you were getting a $5 a week mailer, you could count on getting the booby prize every time. So I don't know if they're going to have the it's going to be so highly correlated this time or not. Mr. Gunn said it's not going to be quite so highly correlated, and we shall see. The Palms. This Friday and Saturday will be the final slot man swap drawings. The top three players have an interactive game where they put four different slot machines in a particular order, and their prize is decided by it, somewhere between $1,234 and $4,321. This Sunday, they're having an additional drawing. It's called $15,000 Rock and Win. So every 2 hours, starting 11 in the morning, they're giving away a little over $3,000 to 10 people. Top prize is $750.
That's this Sunday?
That is this Sunday.
Oh.
You can win twice. So
I did really well last time they had that, but I'm going to be out of town sword fighting this weekend.
So that opens up a chance for somebody else. Now, if you can start earning tickets to this Friday midnight, officially 12:01 Saturday morning, and if you play on Saturday before the slot man swap drawing, then your entries will count for both. If you play after the slot man slot drawings on Saturday or anytime Sunday, then it's going to count for next Friday's drawing. In June, they're going to have Friday drawings at the Palms. So I personally would rather double up on my promotions, and so find a way to do it for two different things. And so this kind of thing appeals to me. Silverton. Every Friday in May, the Silverton's holding a 7 p.m. drawing where 10 winners receive a total of $10,000 in cash or free play. Tomorrow night is their final drawing. 2 hours later, 9 o'clock, is a month-long drawing. They're giving away $37,500 towards a new Mercedes or $30,000 in cash or free play, along with $4,000 winners. You can win at both the 7 o'clock and the 9 o'clock. Last week, they called my name, and then they kicked me out of the drawing, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I remember one of Frank's friends, I was talking to him, and he goes, did they kick you out because you work for him? I go, no. He goes, did they kick you out because you're an advantage player? I go, no. He goes, aren't you going to tell me? So I said, well, you seem to have so much fun guessing, there's no reason to tell you. So he goes, tell me. So I go, well, it turns out that I was the 11th person called. And they got the count screwed up, and there are only 10 envelopes. And so they awarded me $250 in free play, which was the bottom prize, which was probably appropriate way for them to solve the problem. So it wasn't that I was kicked out in any ways. It was just that they had a full house before they called my name. So it's getting called and kicked out is a better result than not getting called at all. Now, next month they're going to have a pull tab promotion. You can play $10,000 a day or $5,000 a day or $1,000 a day. And according to the limit, you get one pull tab. When they did this last year, this was a very nice promotion. The $10,000 award, which I played every day, my average win was more than $100 in free play, which made it a 1% promotion. Sometimes it was $250 free play, sometimes it was $500 free play, and sometimes it was other things. It was dinner for two at Twin Creeks, it was 8 show tickets, or it was Cabana for two.
I had a blast going to those concerts there. So I got the show tickets like 4 times.
Yeah, so I actually took 39 other people from our square dancing group to go see a Sarah Evans concert, and so I was king of the hill of the square dancing group because we all did that. So that was pretty good. Now, also at Silverton, they have a new game there, which makes it attractive for low rollers. They have a quarter triple play progressive, so progressives on each of the three lines, plus a Delta Royal progressive. This is similar to what they have at Orleans, similar to what they have at Samstown. The best game on there is 9-7 double bonus, which is a 99.11 game. Almost always, when you include the mailer and the slot club, it's a positive game. If you don't know how to play that game, I'll be teaching it in the June 28th class at Samstown, which is a Tuesday afternoon. And if you don't know double bonus, you probably don't want to go the week before where I'm going the basic 10-7 double bonus. And then on the 28th will be the modifications you make to that, to the 9-7. But they don't have a lot of quarter games, which are good to play there. And so this is good. If the machines are located in front of Starbucks. This coming Monday there is a double point or five times point day. Limited to 80,000 bonus points. So that means if you're a video poker player, you can play 80,000 points and get everything doubled. If you're a slot player, you can play 20,000 points and get everything the 5X.
It's funny. I think of the 975 double bonus poker as the normal one.
Okay.
And I think of the non-progressive as the ones with the differences.
Well, good. We don't need to debate.
Progressives are normal to me, and non-progressives are weird.
Yes. Okay. Well, good. So that's that. So we're going to talk about the M Casino and its progressives after we talk to Stanford Wong. Stanford Wong is now on the line. He is primarily known as a blackjack author, but he's written about a number of other gambling subjects as well, pie-gal poker, craps, etc. Tonight we're going to be talking about his book called Casino Tournament Strategy. Tournaments are one of the ways that players can gain an edge over the house. I know professional tournament players. It's not uncommon for strong players to have a 10 or 20% advantage or more over the typical player in a tournament. Casino Tournament Strategy is required reading for anyone who wishes to attack tournaments intelligently. This is Stanford Wong's second visit to Gambling with an Edge. If you want to hear his first visit on the book Professional Blackjack, download the March 31 show, either from bobdancer.com or progressivevp.com. Stanford Wong, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be back.
You're our first repeat customer.
Well, second. Michael Shackelford beat him
by
1 week. But they're friends, so that they'll live with that. Is who's first and who's second. They're not going to lose a lot of sleep over that. So, Stanford, what are the several of the major differences between regular casino play and casino tournament play?
Oh, there's huge differences. You basically can't even compare them. In regular play, it's you against the casino. You're just trying to win money. If you're a situation like blackjack where the house edge goes up and down, you bet less when the casino has the edge and more money when you have the edge. But in tournaments, it's not whether you win alone that counts. It's what you do versus what everybody else does. And if you win a little bit and everybody else wins a lot, you are not going to advance in the tournament. Or if you lose a little bit and everybody else loses a lot, then you will advance in the tournament. You know, it's not winning or losing. It's winning or losing more than what your opponents do. So in a tournament, you've got to keep an eye on what other people are doing and make appropriate moves depending on what the other people are doing and not necessarily just trying to beat the dealer.
So when Kenny Rogers says you never count your money when you're sitting at the table, he would not have made a good tournament player.
Well, that advice is not good tournament advice. In blackjack, for example, you're better off not counting cards. If you're going to count something, you're better off keeping track of what your opponents have for chips. The best tournament players are people that know exactly how far ahead or behind they are from their opponents because they know what their opponents have. The opponent wins $100. They add they keep it a mental tally. They add $100 to their mental tally of what that opponent has. Kenny Rogers is not giving tournament advice.
So you're better off if you have a good opponent's betting something like $135 or something to make it harder for them to do this arithmetic in their head.
Essentially, yes. If you've got an opponent that keeps the tally of your chips in his head, why, you know, make it a number that is more difficult for him to remember. And also stack your chips in a way that is more difficult for him to count if he wants to look over and count your chips.
So count them in stacks of 17 rather than stacks of 20 or something. Okay, good. Now,
well, in a tournament, you're required to keep your stacks by color. You can't mix them all up, you know, have red ones and green ones and black ones in the same stack. You've got to keep them by color. But you don't have to keep your stacks jagged so it's real easy for people to count. You know, if you keep them real neat so where the edges are all squared up, somebody looks over and they don't know if you've got 8 chips in that stack or 9 chips unless they count them one by one. So one of the things that you do when you're trying to become a good tournament player is you practice on things like counting chips. What we used to do is we'd sit around the table and we'd put a stack of chips there and everybody'd estimate how many chips they thought there were in that stack, and then we'd count them, and if you're off, well, you just have to practice and get better at it. You can get to where you can get pretty good at it, but you have to be able to count those chips when they're a long ways away. I mean, somebody might be sitting 6 feet away from you and he's your opponent. You're not going to get out of your chair and walk over and see how many chips he has in front of him. You better, you know, be able to come up with a real close estimate from a distance.
So is it more important to estimate his chips or stack your own chips sloppily?
I think estimating his chips is the more difficult skill and the one that needs practice. Your own chips, you don't want them stacked sloppily, because if they're sloppily, they're too easy to count. You want them to be right, neat, straight corners, all the edges aligned with each other.
Really?
So it looks just like a column.
It's easier to count when they're... I would think a stack of 18 chips, I mean, you can practice and get the various sizes, and you would know how big that is, but when they're kind of off-center and they're tilted and stuff, it's harder to guess.
They have to be stacked. There's no such thing as tilted. But if they're off-center, then people can see, okay, you know, where the little jogs are, that's where one chip ends and another one starts. It makes it real easy to count.
Okay, good.
But
good point.
If they're perfectly aligned with each other, then from a distance, you can't tell one chip where one chip stops and another one starts. What you have to do essentially is just learn from the height of the chips. How many chips, when the height looks like the same as the width, for example, how many chips is that? That's the kind of thing you have to learn.
Boy, I was raised to believe you should never ask someone how much money they have or try to figure out, you know, what their bankroll was. It was impolite. But, you know, it's very different. Hey, listen, most of our listeners are, of course, video poker players. Now, I know your book doesn't cover video poker tournaments specifically, but I noticed there was a section called Principles Useful to All Casino Tournaments. I really found that really interesting. Can you give us some examples of these principles?
Well, probably the biggest one is to succeed or bust out. You don't want to have the tournament session end and you're sitting there with some score on a machine or a pile of chips or something, but it's too small a pile. If the minimum to move on was 500 and you finish with 300, you don't move on. If you would have been able to bet that whole 300 and either double it or bust out, then maybe you'd be on to the next round of the tournament. So we always used to look at it that the best thing to do is to advance in the tournament. The second best thing to do is to bust out.
Well, good.
Wow.
So dying with unspent bullets in your gun is a waste.
Yes, and I'm not sure exactly how you'd apply that to video poker, but I suppose there are situations.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
If you've got a pair and a hand that couldn't make a straight flush, say, and a pair's not going to give you enough points to get to where you want to go, you'd break up the pair and try for the straight flush, whereas the better play for just against the casino would be to hold the pair.
You missed the beginning of the show. We were actually discussing the one and only time that I did a tournament, video poker tournament, where I changed strategy because of the volume of people in the tournament. And my partner and I determined that the only way you were getting in the money was a royal flush, period, end of sentence. So we played a strategy where basically we were just going for the royal. And he in fact, got dealt four tens, held one ten, and drew the royal. So
it's cleverly
that's
held the right
ten.
That's
a real good example of the difference between tournament play and straight-on play against the casino. If it would have been real money, no tournament involved, and he throws those four tens, you'd have him committed.
That's right.
I saw that happen once.
You're trying for royals.
I saw that happen once in a real casino, too. In the old Frontier, they had this progressive called the Frontier 3-meter. It was a 6-coin. I don't know if you ever played it. But a slot floor person was just checking the machine. And She got dealt four tens, didn't want to hit the jackpot, so she held 110 and got the royal instead. And it was a paperwork nightmare for her. She was so distraught. She didn't know what to do when she hit this thing. But oh, yeah. Anyway.
So your book, Casino Tournament Strategy, was written with help from your friends. As I understand it, this is second and third hand. You had a lot of young guys who, smart guys, who would, you would subsidize them in tournaments, and then they would come and you talk about it. Now, Anthony Curtis was one of these. He's from LVA at Las Vegas Advisor and Huntington Press, as was Blair Rodman, who some of our listeners don't know Blair yet, but he's going to be on in a few weeks talking about his Kill Phil book. Now, I actually wish I had moved to Vegas earlier. I tell myself that I would have been part of your group. I don't know if I would have qualified at that time, but, oh, well, I can think of that if I want to.
No, I think you would have qualified. You were the kind of person I was looking for. And subsidized is the wrong word. What we did for tournaments was we'd set it up where we had two different piles of money. We had the player share and we had the bank share. And anybody could put up as much as they wanted to of the bank share up to their portion. I mean, if you're, it's a five-person team, you can put up 20% of the bank. But I was dealing with people then who just didn't have the money to put up for the bankroll, so I was putting up more than my one-fifth just because we had to have the money there for the entry fees. But as soon as the other players got enough money where they felt like putting in their whole share, then there was no more advantage for me on that. I mean, if I had, you know, four partners each putting up his own 20%, then I just put up 20% myself.
So
the first few tournaments we played, I was putting up more than 20%, but it was just because other people didn't have the capital to do it themselves. So it's not like they were employees or something. It was partnership. It was a team.
Now, back when you were doing this, which is 25 years ago or some such number, a lot of your opponents didn't particularly know tournament strategy. Now, partly it's your own damn fault, a lot of people know tournament strategy because they've read your book. So does this change things as to how you play?
It changes how you play, and it also changes whether you enter a tournament or not. You know, back then, we were able to select tournaments based on lots of unknowledgeable opponents. But nowadays, you can't do that. If you want to enter a tournament, you just pretty much have to enter it. And if there's lots of skillful players there, well, that's just the way it is.
So you kind of hurt yourself by publishing the book.
I guess so. But, you know, that's very typical. Doyle Brunson hurt himself by publishing his poker book, for example. After his book came out, he discovered that suddenly his opponents were much more difficult to beat because they were following all his advice.
Yeah, his life's really been ruined since he did that.
I intended to write a book from the get-go, though. I didn't intend to become a professional tournament player. If I wanted to only play tournaments, then I would never have written a book about it. That was the reason I had a team, for example, is because with multiple people that I was watching, you know, standing behind watching them play and all, I was able to watch circumstances occur with, you know, a lot more variety of circumstances than if I would have only been interested in my own play. So this just gave me the opportunity to learn five times as fast the things I wanted to learn to write a book.
If your income had been coming solely from tournament play, then you probably wouldn't have written a book about it, right?
Well, you know, I do have people in my field who learn new things and then use them themselves. When I was at Stanford, for example, getting my PhD, there was another PhD student there named Joel Friedman. And he and I know Joel well. About the same age. Yeah, I think I might be a year or two older than Joel. And he and I are both approximately equally smart. Joel might be brighter than me, I'm not sure. But Joel and I went different paths. I would learn something about getting an edge from casinos, and I'd put it into a book. Joel learned something about winning money from casinos, and he uses it himself to win money from casinos.
Oh, yes, he's a very...
You know, there's two paths you can choose there. And neither one is right, neither one is wrong. You have to decide which path is best for you personally. You know, you guys are probably chosen the same path I am. You learn something, you share it.
Yes.
If you were serious about making money in video poker, so, you find something good, you're going to keep it yourself.
For the record, I thought I was moving out of Las Vegas for good when I published my book. And I didn't.
So now you're staying in Las Vegas for bad. Now, on your website, bj21.com, there's lots of different areas that they talk about, primarily blackjack, but there are other areas as well. Does a conversation ever go towards tournament strategy?
Very seldom. There's the occasional thread on tournament strategy, but mostly besides blackjack, what people like to talk about on BJ21 is poker is probably their number two game, and also video poker. There's some discussion of sports betting, but mostly blackjack and poker. Those are the big ones.
I noticed that you had some stuff on game theory. In live poker, players talk about game theory a lot, where they might call 30% of the time, raise 30% of the time, and all-in raise 40% of the time. Is there a similar approach ever used in blackjack or other tournaments?
The main thing you have to have to make game theory applicable is something similar to bluffing, in that in poker you can bet and people don't know whether you have the cards to back up that bet or not. And there's really nothing like that in blackjack tournaments, say, or a video poker tournament.
There can be secret bets.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's the one area where game theory comes into play is secret bets. Because you want to make a secret bet that is not predictable. In fact, part of I've got a chapter in the book there on how to predict what other people have for their secret bets, because it turns out that people pretty much follow a predictable pattern. You know, he might think he's making a secret bet, but I know what he's betting because I know what people always bet in that situation. But that's not the bet that I'm going to make myself. I will use what you've suggested as something where I've got a certain probability of a big bet, a certain probability of a small bet, or, you know, because I don't want to be predictable. So, yes, game theory does come into play in tournaments, but not as much as in poker play.
I studied, the work that von Neumann and Morgenstern did on game theory back in the late 30s, 40s, right?
Well, late 40s.
Late 40s. Has anything new been done on it since, or did they just write the definitive work and nobody's bothered to improve on it, kind of like Euclid's Elements?
I'm not really sure on that. The basics of game theory, those guys worked out, and it's not like they left holes for other people to come in. Now, most of mathematics, there's been more recent developments than the first guys that thought it up, but it's just kind of like filling in the little details around the edges and extending it a little bit. But I have not kept track with mathematics, so I really don't have the answer to that.
I was just curious.
Yeah, the guy from A Beautiful Mind, John Ford Nash, was that his name? He did a lot of work in game theory after von Neumann and Morgenstern.
Did he?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'd like to read that. Yeah, when I was doing my research for my book, I studied all the old stuff first. I even went back to Liber de Ludo L.A., written in the 14th century by Germa Cardano and all that, but I didn't read anything that new, strangely enough.
What kind of casino tournaments offer the skillful player the biggest edge, and what kind offers the smallest edge, and why?
I can tell you easily what's the smallest edge is blackjack, because In blackjack you each get your own cards. I mean, I might be the best player at the table, but if I get the 16 and the guy next to me gets the 20, he's got an edge over me. The games that offer the experts the biggest edge are the games where everybody bets against the same results. Craps, for example. Your bet and my bet are all going to apply to the next roll of the dice. Whatever is the roll for your bet is going to be the same thing that decides my bet. So there's a much bigger edge for a good player in something like craps or baccarat, where we're all betting on the same outcomes.
I would think craps, since there's so many different bets you can make.
That's what makes craps a good game for a tournament player.
I would think so.
A tournament player will know what all the different bets are, what the different payoffs are, whereas somebody who's just a crap player who's been playing craps for 30 years but has never played a tournament, he's probably either a right-sider or a dark-sider, and all he knows is his bets. He knows to bet on 3 or 4 or 5, 6 numbers at a time, and he just doesn't know how to put his money out there, so it'll all win at one time or all lose at one time, and he doesn't know to go to the other side if that's what's appropriate to, you know, make the move he needs to move. So crap tournaments are won by crap experts much more often than, say, blackjack tournaments are won by tournament experts.
Mm-hmm. Did you say right-sider and dark-sider?
Well, that's what they call it in craps. If you're betting on the pass line,
pass line or don't pass,
that's the right side. And if you're on the don't pass, that's called the dark side.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
there's another kind of tournament with less skill than blackjack, and that would be slot tournaments. Slot tournaments are basically hit the damn button and keep hitting it until the tournament's over.
I have a technique.
I guess you're right. Except what you have to do in slot tournaments, there's a little bit of skill, and that skill involves keeping playing. Usually you're allowed a certain number of credits and you can use them up easily, then that takes the skill factor out. But if it's one of these things, okay, you're going to play for 30 minutes, as many spins as you can get in 30 minutes, that's what you get, then you obviously want to get as many spins as you can in. And I've seen slot tournaments where people, you know, the neighbor hits a big score, they stop playing themselves and congratulate the neighbor. No, you don't do that. You keep playing. You keep hitting that.
That must be from years ago. All the slot tournaments today is like it's real easy to get the idea. Hit the damn button and don't stop.
I have a tip.
So there's no skill involved in your saying a slot tournament today.
Well, there is a little skill if you want to reduce the stress in your body. If you take your leg, whether you're right or left,
the dark side or the other side of your leg. Okay.
I happen to be ambidextrous, but that's irrelevant. I usually take my right knee, and I'll balance my foot on the chair, and then you bounce your knee, which it's like a nerve tap. Your leg will just bounce continuously, and you can balance your arm.
With your toes.
Well, no, you balance your arm on your knee, and then your leg does all the work, and it's very, very low impact, and your hand never gets tired, and you never get stressed.
Uh-huh. How often have you won these tournaments, Frank?
Frequently. I've won a couple last year.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Good. All right. So our time is up. It's lots of good points today, as usual for you. Hope to have you on again talking about your sports betting book, which I found eye-opening when I started getting into some sports betting. Thank you very much for being here.
Is there anything else?
Thank you for inviting me. It's been fun.
You have so many books to come on our show and talk about. It seems like we're never going to run out.
Right. Maybe I'll get ahead of Mike Shackelford.
Well, I don't know. When you talk about craps, he wants to be on the same show and debate you. So so we may set that up.
Hey, that'll be fun.
I'll bet it would. Thanks again.
It's always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you soon. Giant in the industry, thanks for all you've done.
Well, I hope we have an NFL season this year so we can do sports betting this year.
Yeah. I hope so, too. I would. The smart bunny's betting against it, though. All righty.
All right. Take it easy.
Yep.
He's one of the giants. My first book was dedicated to him as he kind of trod the path that I wanted to be. He was an inspiration to me.
Last time he was on, he's the only guest, too, so far that, you know, where I laughed so hard I fell off my chair. When he was talking about it, he's not good at math. I couldn't take it.
It's like, you know, some Stanford PhDs are smarter than others, but but how dumb could he be, huh?
Exactly. Well, what I said that wasn't that what I said? Something like, I hope we could all be as bad at math as he
really?
Is. Yeah.
So next week we're gonna have a poker player, a poker writer. And also used to help run the Harrah's World Series of Poker tournament.
You're deliberately bringing on people that know about subjects that I'm ignorant about.
This is called gambling with an edge. Part of our strategy is to educate you. We can talk about progressive video poker, but that's a limited subject to talk about on the air. You can teach classes in it, but that doesn't really. Or relate to radio. But this is gambling with an edge. It's supposed to be all kinds of gambling. So the World Series of Poker is the biggest poker tournament, biggest live poker tournament in the world. It starts in Vegas next Tuesday. It goes for several weeks and then takes the final event, the big one, $10,000 entry, although there are bigger entry fees, but the main event is going to have, you know, 6,000 people in it or 10,000 people in it, some big number. And they'll get down to 9 people in the middle of July, and then they'll take a 3 or 4 month break and come back in, they call them the November 9. And so there will be tons and tons of ink written about the November 9, and then they'll come in November and finish it in a day or two. So
they're doing that, because they're at the Rio, is that right?
It's done at the Rio.
That's why Gambler's Bookstore is putting in a satellite place over there, right?
Could be.
Yeah.
But anyway, Nolan is going to be, Nolan Dalla is the man who's coming in next week. And he's going to be sharing World Series of Poker stories, what it is, how it started, some of the colorful characters. He wrote a book on Stu Unger, who won the main event three times and had significant... Stu is a brilliant guy with substance abuse problems. But anyway, that's going to be next week.
Colorful.
He is. And he wore blue glasses, too, so that's colorful. In 2 weeks, we're going to be joined by Arnold Snyder. And Frank and I are excited about this for totally different reasons. Arnold Snyder has been a blackjack guru. He ranks with Stanford Wong as some of the doing seminal work in blackjack. And they're both part of the initial class of the Blackjack Hall of Fame. And recently he put out three volumes on solving Sudokus, which is the best Sudoku kind of information out there. I'm a self-taught Sudoku player, and when I read Snyder's book, it's like, wow, I didn't know that. Wow. So I thought it was pretty cool. Now, Frank is drooling over the Snyder's latest book. It's called Topless Vegas.
Well.
You're not drooling?
I'm not drooling.
All right. Frank is creamy.
Been there,
no,
done
Frank
that.
Is. Okay, good. All right. So anyway, it evaluates various kinds of places in Vegas, such as pools and nightclubs and pools, which are topless or bottomless or both. So that's going to be next week. Or that's going to be 2 weeks. And in 3 weeks, we're going to have a repeat visit from our gambling legal expert, I. Nelson Rose.
Ah, yes. That was one of our best interviews.
It was. And so if you have a legal question that is suitable for, general enough and suitable enough for, to do on the air, send it to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, and we'll feed it to Professor Rose beforehand to give him a little bit of heads up on it. We're not going to shoot him all these questions and make him shoot from the hip and give legal advice to everything.
So you're saying that there's illegal questions to the legal questions?
Illegal questions. No, there's some that have a better chance of getting on the air.
Anyway. By the way, I met Arnold last night at the Gambler's Bookstore
grand opening. I introduced you.
And he was telling me about how he wrote the book. I guess Anthony gave him an expense account.
Yes.
To go out and do his research.
That's the way to do it.
Which was...
wouldn't you like to have that job if you had to? If you had to get a job.
Well, 10 years ago, I would have loved to. Yeah. But now
you're bored with it. Okay. Scene one, scene them both. Okay.
Well, no, it's not that. I have damage.
Okay.
I have trauma. Trauma.
We have one more commercial that we haven't discussed yet, and we're going to do that. And also talk about the subject matter of the commercial. So that is the M. The M, they have these new progressives. The Las Vegas Advisors is calling them the Frankenbob Monster Progressives.
I wanted to call them the Rapid Hydra because you cut one head off and two grow back. But.
So when it comes to Frankenbob Monster Progressives, Frank and I are trying to decide whether we should be flattered by this or we should... sue Anthony for libel. We haven't decided what to do yet. But as of 5 o'clock tonight, the Quarter Joker Wild game was above 2,800, which is more than 100%, even if before you include the slot club. And Super Double Bonus was 2,300, which also exceeds 100%.
I ran it, by the way, on the computer before I left the house, and I calculate with meter eyes. I don't know why, but for some reason people don't realize that if you sit down to play a progressive, it goes up while you're playing. So by the time you hit it, it's higher than it was when you sat down. If you factor in the meter rise that occurs during play, the points on the card, and everything else, if you're mailered, it's worth about 101.2. If you're not mailered, it's worth about 101 right now as it stands.
You said 101.2. You mean 102.
101%. 101% and 0.2.
Good. Well, so if you're mailered, you get an extra 0.6 because it's triple point days if you get the mailer there. But even with single points, it's over 101%.
Yeah.
Now, the dollar machines have not gone up quite so much. As of 5 o'clock today, the top ones were at 8,400 and 6,400. But these are still decent plays and a higher return than their other dollar machines in the house. There was the Royal hit. Actually, yesterday somebody hit a double bonus quarter progressive there. So that one's back down to, now it's at 1,100, whereas most of the other ones are 1,800.
Somebody played a jackpot that was $1,000 lower?
Yes, and they hit it. And they, I'm sure they're very happy with it.
Well, I hope that wasn't one of our listeners.
Well, I don't know. It's they're very happy with
play,
it.
Play the highest meter.
Okay.
Hot so, tip of the day.
All right. So we have Frank and I each created the Joker Wild progressive strategies. Now, I sent Frank my Joker Wild strategy several days ago, and today he put his own out there, and I have not looked at his. They are a little bit different in that he considers penalty cards with his strategies, and I'm doing a penalty-free strategy. So they
I only have one penalty consideration on the strategy, and it was simply because I went to check what had been printed out by the computer. I actually used Wolf Video Poker to do the basic strategy and then corrected it from there, and it took quite a while. I spent about 5 hours on this. But the weird one that came up was if you have two to the straight flush two-way, which would be like 5-7 suited, and another card suited with it, then it loses to a single ace and a king with a joker. But if there isn't another suited card, then it beats it. So that's the only penalty that I have on the strategy. There is another huge difference between yours and mine, is, you know, I never mention wild cards. So if you are looking in the joker hands and you see 2SF, that means two straight flush cards plus a wild card. And you would call that
SF3.
SF3. And I don't include the wild card. So that's another big difference.
So, and yeah, and I don't use terms like three-way and two-way. I use straight flush 3 plus 1 and 0 and minus 1. So we have, each of us have our own indecipherable strategy. So they're both going to be up there. They're going to be very similar.
Oh, the strategy legend, by the way, is posted on another one of our week shows. I can't tell you off the top of my head, but if anyone downloads the strategy, which is posted on today's show, and you don't know the strategy legend, just look back a couple weeks, you'll find it.
Oh, good. And it's, but it was written 10 years ago and not proof since.
No, I did a new one.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
For Joker Wild?
Well, it's the same strategy system.
With some differences. With some differences. Good. All right. So, and what strategy are we going to do next?
Well, I think we should do the next highest meter, right? Super double bonus.
Super double bonus. All right. I have that one done. I will send it to you, and we will get them all posted.
There was one thing. I don't know if there's probably a few listeners out there that haven't actually played Kings of Better Joker. And, you know, this is just a little tidbit, but one of the things that confused me to no end when I first studied it was the sequence of royals. So if you have two to the royal, ace king is the best.
Yes. Now you're talking without a joker.
King with another card is the second best.
Yes.
Then jack, or then ace with anything, with a non-king. Ace king, ace queen, ace jack, ace 10 is the third rank. Jack 10 is the fourth rank, and queen jack and queen 10 are the fifth rank.
That's correct.
So it bounces all over the place. And let's say you're dealt, a straight with two different royals. You have, you know, ace queen suited and jack 10 suited. It gets very confusing, I think. So that's one thing you want to...
It isn't confusing at all. You better hold the ace queen.
Well, I'm just saying, for people that are new to Joker Poker, that's something to watch
for.
True,
it's a kings are better game. And so, like, a pair of queens is a low pair, and a pair of kings is a high pair. And so if you're used to thinking of queens and jacks as high pairs, as you are in...
You mean a non-pay pair.
Fine. No, I mean high pairs. But so it takes a... it takes a mind shift. A friend of mine was saying he would play the Joker strategy, you know, but he didn't really have one. So I said, "All right, I have it, one for 10,000 coins." He goes, "Well, I want one for 10,000 coins. I want one for 12,000 coins. I want one for 14,000 coins." And I looked at him and I said, "And you're expecting me to do this? Uh-huh. Good luck." So I don't know how many people are going to appreciate what we've done. Whatever we've done, they will want more.
One thing, if you find any errors in the strategy, I'm not saying that this is necessarily 100% perfect. I did the best I could Kings or Better Joker is the game in my professional career that I have played the least. I, in fact, spent 1 month playing Kings or Better Joker out of the last 20 years of my life. So it is not my most familiar strategy. And if you find any errors in this, go ahead and fire me off an email or fire us off an email. I'm actually going to be out of town sword fighting for the next 3 days.
You've been talking about you're going to have a date with a girl you know at the Palms rather than...
Yes, I've in fact canceled the date.
Oh, dear.
For the second time.
Uh-huh.
And did this is actually a Playboy Playmate.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So she's... I'm sure there's nobody else wanting to take her out. She's just sitting waiting for you to cancel on her the third time.
Well, yeah. It's not my finest moment, but anyway.
All right, did we have any listener questions?
We have several listener questions, so, I mean, we could just keep on going here, but we're running out of time. First off, James asks, I have a suggestion for topic to discuss. Could you talk about how to use or interact with a casino host? A lot of us have no experience with them. Now, rather than answer this question on this week's show, I just wanted to say, why don't we get Manny on to do like a five-minute interview and, you know, Vladimir Manny Manischewitz from the Palms?
Manny would be good. We had Chris Corona on several months ago.
Yeah, but he's a independent host. I think it'd be nice to get the host's opinion and have him on and talk about it.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, it's his 50th birthday next weekend. Are you going?
Yes.
Huge party. Yes. Pool party, room party, and yeah.
Yeah, he's called me up and told me that I'm coming.
Okay, our next question.
Before we do that, yeah. There's a lot written on the care and feeding of slot hosts. So in my $1 million video poker, there's several chapters on that. Gene Scott has written a lot about that subject. Mm-hmm. VP free, that is a regular subject to be discussed. So this is not something that is answerable in a 3-minute radio talk.
No, I realize that, but I think it would be a good, you know, if people are interested in how to talk to hosts, let's get a host on and ask them how they like to be talked to.
Good.
Horse's mouth and all that. Okay, so James, we'll get to your question soon. Rick asks, one of the passing comments Bob made on one of your shows was something like, I wouldn't mind giving up a couple hundreds of a percent if it meant I could play quick quads. That got me wondering about what other considerations might make Bob or you, being me, throw off a couple hundreds of a percent EV. Bob, you want to take this?
For me, it's of EV, it's not calculated in terms of percent. It's calculated in terms of dollars per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Like I sometimes at the Palms will play there. 100 play quarter bonus poker, which is a third of a percent tighter than jacks or better.
Because you can get out more hands much more quickly.
You can get so many more hands so quickly. And so in terms of drawing and in terms of monthly mailers and blah, 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 it all adds up. And so it
I better get... Yeah. No, I think people understand what you're saying. I'll get my answer in real quick because we only got about 20 seconds left.
Okay.
I will give up to about a quarter of a percent for a significantly lower variance game. I like stability, and as we all know, I'm extremely risk adverse. So I will play a much safer game and give up a little EV, but not much. If it's like a 4.4, 0.5, then I go with the higher fluctuation game, and I just pile on partners.
You'd play 9-6 jacks over NSU.
Yes, I would. All right, we got 4 seconds to out. See you all next week. Have fun at the M, and I'll hopefully it'll be down when I get back.
Go ahead and a royal flush.
If you like gambling with an edge but haven't been able to enjoy it with your whole family, tune in for the new Gambling with an Edge. For children, learn proven techniques for doubling your lunch money. Make extra time for homework by decreasing your social acceptability. Add motivation and improve your grades by betting on the outcome. And of course, learn how to increase your bankroll by betting against yourself and throwing the occasional test. Get in fights after school a lot? No problem. Learn how to establish proper odds and set a money line. We'll even show you how to make supplementary income helping people with their homework by setting yourself up as an expert in your field, even if you have no clue what you're doing. Yes, it's Gambling with an Edge for children, because a child's mind isn't a terrible thing not to waste. And for our Zulu-speaking listeners... Siya temba,
Sizofige Makaya.
For an archived version of tonight's show, you can visit ProgressiveVP.com and BobDancer.com. The sponsors for the show are the M, the South Point, the Palms, and Silverton Hotel and Casinos, as well as the website VideoPoker.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next Thursday night at 7 for our next rigidly scheduled period of total spontaneity. How'd you like to be a mystery shopper, earning no less than $450 a venture? GetJob450@gmail.com. It's easy, simple, and no application fees. GetJob450@gmail.com. GetJob450@gmail.com. Earning cash for shopping. GetJob450@gmail.com. Be a mystery shopper. GetJob450@gmail.com. GetJob450@gmail.com. You already know Facebook is great for communicating with family and friends. But did you know it's also great for communicating with your favorite radio station? Search KLAV 1230 AM on Facebook to see all the great programming KLAV has to offer. And when you like us on our Facebook fan page, you're automatically entered in future contests for fabulous prizes. Like us on Facebook today and meet the KLAV host. Search KLAV 1230 AM on Facebook. Love us on radio. Like us on Facebook. And follow us on Twitter. We are KLAV 1230 AM.
So the guy says, the duck quacked me up.
Oh, you and the jokes.
The Jerk Show, Tuesday through Saturday, midnight to 3, on KLAV, AM 1230, The Clock, Las Vegas.
Hi, this is Steve Crowley, our national radio program, Steve Crowley's American Scene. We're 21 years young on the air, and the real news, the good news, is that American Scene is airing now right here on KLAV AM 1230, Monday through Friday mornings at 10 a.m. Our programs help you survive and prosper through up and down economies. So join us for Steve Crowley's American Scene weekdays at 10 right here on KLAV, the talk of Las Vegas.
Hey, it's Schnitt. Thrilled to be on the air in Las Vegas on KLAV 1230 AM, the talk of Las Vegas. Join me every Monday through Friday from noon to 2 p.m. If you're tired of the same old blah, blah, blah talk radio in Las Vegas, then tune into the Schnitt Show. Las Vegans, if you want to hear a brand new, fresh opinion on conservative political talk, keep the dial locked in on 1230 AM KLAV or listen to me live online at KLAV1230AM.com.
Hello, this is Matt with Finley RV. Join me every Friday at 3 p.m. with the RVing Adventures radio show. I'll take you on a little adventure every Friday afternoon and discuss all the best places to travel with you and your RV. RVing Adventures is a way of life. If you love RVing as much as I do, then you'll tune in every Friday at 3 p.m. and let the traveling begin. The United States has so many wonderful places to get away to, and Finley RV has your vehicle to get you on the road to your next adventure. Stories, RV questions, and lots of fond memories every Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KLAV.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Hey, Las Vegas, join me, Sean Dugan, and me, Vegas Pete Mattina, Tuesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. for the Middle Class Now Show, covering all subjects middle class, local, national, and the globe. So if you're a middle class working stiff like we are, and you're sick and tired of what's going on around you, and you want your voice heard, then we look forward to hearing from you Tuesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. on KLAV, the talk of Las Vegas.
Hi, this is attorney Malcolm Laverne, host of The Legal Hour, right here on KLAV. If you've been in a car accident, if you're thinking about filing for bankruptcy, if you've been arrested, or if you need a divorce, custody, or child support matter handled, please give me a call at 448-7981. Again, that's Las Vegas, 448-7981. The Laverne Law Group is a general service law firm.
The Legal Hour, Friday night at 8, only on KLAV.
My name is Kevin Sipes, and I host Energy Saving Solutions every Monday morning at 9 a.m. I am a ResNet certified HERS rater, a BPI building analyst professional, as well as a USGBC lead green associate. Join me and our special guests every Monday morning at 9 a.m. on KLAV AM 1230, where we will be discussing topics including energy conservation, building performance, energy independence, and living a greener, more sustainable lifestyle.
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood of the Stones for Rad. You know it's okay to rock and roll and party, because I do it all the time. Just let someone else do the driving. That's what I do. Remember, rock lives, and you should too. Please don't drink and drive.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department.
Love us on radio. Like us on Facebook. And